Welcome to the June 26th meeting of the Emergency Medical Care Committee. We do not have a quorum today, so there are a couple action items we can act on. However, we're going to make some recommendations moving to the Orange County Board of Supervisors, so we'll take care of that business. At this point, we'd like to call to order and make introductions, starting to my right.
Good morning.
My name is Patrick Powers, representing the 2nd District Board of Supervisors.
John Gilway, and representing the 4th District Board of Supervisors.
Sam Stratton, Orange County EMS Medical Director.
Wolfgang Kanabi, representing Orange County Fire Chiefs.
Dean Gross, representing the Orange County League of California Cities.
Sharon Hoyer, representing Orange Coast Chapter of the Emergency Nurses Association.
Monica Ruzic, representing the American Red Cross.
Great. Thank everyone for being here. And at this point, Supervisor here? I don't think so. We're going to have a couple presentations, and Dr. Stratton is going to handle those.
We have with us here three outgoing members of EMCC, and we would like to present certificates of appreciation. If I could have Sharon and Monica and John, if everyone will excuse my using first names. Come up, yeah, you have to come up here because somebody's going to take your picture. That's, you notice I powdered my head. Who's the picture taker? No, I don't know.
I'm not the picture taker.
Oh, no. Mike's got it.
There we go.
Okay. Sharon, here's yours. I always make some inappropriate comments.
Wonderful.
Eileen, just let John know that she spelled his name correctly. I guess since we're guys, we're not going to talk. I didn't hear the Supreme Court hearing thing today.
Yeah.
Okay, if we could get all three of you, that'll be good for our newsletter.
Perfect.
Well, you might as well stay up here, John.
You might as well stay up here.
There are a number of representatives from UCI that I'd like to ask come up because we have a special presentation for UCI. So, Mike, if you could bring everybody up here. And this one I'm going to read.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do this first with the pictures.
How about you guys turn your bodies like this and then kind of scrunch your ears?
Lick your lips. Let me get this
in front of my gut. So We have a special presentation for UCI for a number of different reasons. I'm going to read the proclamation. The proclamation, most of the county proclamations are signed by one of the supervisors. This one is one of the specials that's signed by all five supervisors. So this is anytime you can get all five, because Supervisor Spitzer here yet? Supervisor Spitzer was going to try and make it to present this. So if he's here and I say something wrong, I'm sorry, Supervisor. But to get all five supervisors to agree on anything is relatively rare that they agreed to sign this proclamation, which I think signifies the importance of it. UCI is was one of the first trauma centers in California and, in fact, in the United States. The trauma program at UCI originated after research that was done by researchers at UCI and UC San Francisco that actually showed years and years and years ago. You guys weren't even born at that time, right?
I was born.
Showed that trauma systems actually saved lives. So UCI has been around since the inception and was one of the original trauma centers in not just California, but the United States, and was a partner in proving that trauma and trauma centers are one important and save lives. So representing the trauma program, we have Stephanie Lush and Dr. Lekwa, who have pretty much, how would you say it? Dr. Lekwa is the chair of our Trauma Ops Committee, and Stephanie, I think, has probably been one of the most prominent trauma coordinators in California, I think is easy to say. Very active in our regional trauma committees and things like that. And I think it's important for people to know that UCI is not just an Orange County resource, but also a regional resource, taking calls or taking runs from Riverside County, west of Corona. And I think the primary trauma center, at least when I look at data for the city of Pomona and in the Pasadena area and all. So UCI takes trauma from two other counties as well as Orange County. So it's a major regional center. UCI also is one of the first, and I have representatives of the base hospital and the emergency department here, one of the first base hospitals in California, major resource for Orange County as far as a base hospital. One of our primary, Darlene's a heavy rep, Darlene Isbell, who, what's your title, Darlene?
Bradley.
Darlene
Bradley.
I mean, Darlene Isbell, sorry, Darlene Bradley.
Director of Emergency and Trauma Services.
Yeah, that was a bad, sorry about that.
Still but, a good name.
But which is bad because I, Darlene says that I taught her all her bad habits.
Since
she was a baby nurse. Darlene Bradley has been extremely active in our disaster program and disaster planning and all, along with integrating the base with Orange County. So with that, I realize this is way long-winded, but I'm going to quickly read this proclamation, and then Mike's going to take pictures, and I will shut up. So the County of Orange, UCI Medical Center, by the authority of the Orange County Board of Supervisors, the following resolution is hereby issued. Whereas the University of California Irvine Medical Center is celebrating 35 years of continuous service as a level one paramedic trauma receiving center since earning that designation in June 1980. And whereas the University of California Irvine Medical Center is celebrating 25 years of continuous service as a base hospital since earning that designation in 1990. And whereas the University of California Irvine Medical Center is celebrating 10 years of continuous service as a cardiovascular receiving center since earning that designation in 2005, which, by the way, is when that program began. And whereas the University of California Irvine Medical Center and its medical staff were instrumental in the development of Orange County's Stroke Neurology Receiving Center program in 2009, and whereas the University of California Irvine Medical Center was the first hospital in Orange County to attain certification as an advanced comprehensive stroke center by the Joint Commission, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Orange County Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize, congratulate, and commend the University of California Irvine Medical Center and its medical staff on their service to the County of Orange and its residents. I think as far as the Comprehensive Stroke Center, it was first west of the Mississippi, correct? So the first verified or certified comprehensive stroke center west of the Mississippi. So with that, John, maybe if you don't mind accepting the award.
Does that mic come up here?
Yeah, no, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, that both of us.
Are you guys in?
No.
Get in, John.
We're good.
Get in. Come on.
Yeah, it's an iPhone 6. You can get it. Yeah.
Do some close and some just them, too.
You want close-ups?
Don't give up your day job.
Come on. Focus. I'll take one more.
Focusing right on you, Dr. Stratton.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me smile.
Darling, tell a joke.
I think your finger is blocking your...
Is that better?
It's, well, it's...
Okay. Wasn't blocking it.
That's a no. Thank
you. Mine goes for you. You take it.
Thank you.
Sorry,
thanks,
darling.
Sam. That's okay. Thank you, Dr. Stratton.
Well, congratulations to everyone, for all the board members, the outgoing board members, and thank you for your efforts and your time, and also great job for UC Irvine. And what I'd like to now, Dr. Stratton, it's not too bad if you tick off one supervisor. It's when you tick off three of them that it's the... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been there.
Darlene Isabel, I haven't heard that name. She's my she was my MICN instructor at PTI way many moons ago. So, what we'd like to do now is, well, I guess because we don't have a quorum, we can't approve the minutes, right? So we're going to continue into the next item, or we're going to continue the approval of the minutes to our next meeting. That brings us to Orange County EMS report and correspondence, a medical director's report.
For the medical director's report, a few things. We just talked about UCI and presented the proclamation to them. UCI also underwent the rigorous American College of Surgeons trauma survey the first of this month. And that's a survey that actually covers pretty much a two-day period. And we're waiting for the report from the American College of Surgeons. That usually takes some period of time. But Orange County EMS was in attendance, and they did very, very well. And we were, of course, congratulated by the external reviewers with how well UCI performs as far as a trauma center, and did, in fact, receive some compliments with regard to our overall system. We are in the process of training sheriff's officers, Orange County sheriff's deputies, in the skill of administering Narcan or naloxone. It's the way we do it. We'll be doing it with them is for them to introduce it into the nose so that it's absorbed and will reverse narcotic overdose symptoms, including heroin or prescription drugs. And this is something that has become a focus in the United States over the last, just this year, since the beginning of the year. We intend to have that program up and running, and I don't see where Vicki is, the exact date. When is the exact date, Vicki?
The last training is July 14th, but Stanton, City of Stanton will start as soon as they receive their kits, which should be next week.
Okay. So that program will be going. We'll be monitoring that as a pilot program. And as a pilot program, the pilot policy that sets up the program and describes it, as well as the standing orders that come from OCEMS for the pilot, are available on the Orange County EMS website. And they're under the policies and standing orders section. The Anaheim Community Response Unit, using a nurse practitioner and a paramedic to respond to low-level or less acute calls that come into 911, is now currently in progress. The pilot has been ongoing for about 2 to 3 weeks, actually about 3 to 4 weeks now. We're in the data collection stage, and at this point in time, the general data shows that the program is safe and appears effective. The community paramedicine alternate destination pilot, which is being conducted in Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, and Fountain Valley. This is a program where 911 dispatched paramedics will be able to assess a patient and, if appropriate, move those patients to a urgent care center as opposed to an emergency department for care that's appropriate at an urgent care center. Anyway, that program or pilot is in the final stages of being ready to implement with an implementation date scheduled for August 1. Or expected August 1. A couple of other things. The Orange County Fire Authority has requested approval from Orange County EMS and initiated training, and we expect soon to have paramedic staffing of at selected times and of selected helicopters, mainly in the South County. So we will, for the first time in Orange County, begin to have paramedics dispatched on helicopter resources in the county. And then finally, we participated, as well as many others in the county, in the sidewalk CPR program recently held during EMS week. And again, that was very successful overall countywide, brought a lot of attention to CPR, and we were quite satisfied with the community involvement with that initiative. And that completes my report.
Thank you, Dr. Stratton. That moves us to EMCC correspondence, which we have none, and then that moves us to advisory subcommittee and advisory group reports. Dr. Stratton?
Yeah, I actually would like to have Laurent Rapace give us a OC Meds report. There are a number of committees working on OC Meds. It's not necessarily a EMCC, but I think it would be good to start with that, and then we'll move to the formal committees.
Okay, thank you. We began rolling out OC Meds about three and a half years ago, and at the time, it was based on kind of cutting-edge technology. And it's interesting to say that as technology has evolved, and it's evolving so quickly, we're already having the discussions about replacing components of the system because things have changed so rapidly. So my update is in regard to some of those changes that are occurring, that will be occurring over the next 6 months to a year. So with that said, we're planning to replace the EPCR software, the electronic pre-hospital care report software. The software that we currently have is going to be replaced by next generation software that can be used on any device. The software is currently about 85% complete, and we're ready for field pilot testing by this fall. The software is based on the latest National EMS Information System version 3 standards and has been built from the ground up. So like I said, it's going to be device agnostic, which means you can use it on any device. It can be used on an iPad. It can be used on a Windows device, a Google Android device, or what have you. We have 116 iPads have been purchased with a $75,000 federal block grant. The devices were purchased to assist EMS providers with training and transition to next generation NMSIS 3 compliance systems. A letter was recently distributed to 911 EMS providers to determine provider interest in transitioning to a NMSIS 3 system. Interested agencies will receive a small amount of iPads to assist them with training and transition efforts. The devices will be distributed within the next few weeks. So we're moving along with that. The hospital hub has replaced the former hospital dashboard that was used by hospitals to obtain PDF copies of PCRs. That replacement occurred last month, May 12th. So the hospital dashboard is software that hospitals had used traditionally for the last year and a half to obtain PDF copies of PCRs, and that software has been replaced as a component of this next generation transition. And lastly, OCMS has used funding from Public Health Emergency Preparedness Grant Program to add a new health information hub to the next generation OCMEDS platform. This new health information hub will allow future integration with OCMEDS and local health information exchange networks such as OCPRIO or the Orange County Partnership Regional Health Information Organization and other private HIEs. Such integration will enable real-time patient tracking, access to patient outcome information, and real-time access to patient medical histories to assist EMS providers with treatment and destination decisions. So lots of stuff's happening with OCMEDS. It's moving into the future, and that's my report.
Any board members have any questions on that? I do have one. I know members of my two communities, you know, with the health insurance, the hacking, patient information, and the federal government, there's a lot of members of the community that are concerned about this electronic reporting and what securities that we have in place to prevent stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, the security is in place. The security used by the system is based on the latest and most advanced security platforms. We're using 128-bit encryption. And so the system is hosted by a third-party vendor. So the county does not host the data. The data is hosted by the third-party vendor, and the servers are actually located in Minneapolis with backup in Chicago. So if we have the big one here, everything's going to be in a totally different place with automatic backup. But I can provide any additional information in regard to security of the system. That was one of our main initiatives going forward, is making sure the system's fully secure and HIPAA compliant.
Great. Thank you. Anything else, Dr. Stratton, on those?
The subcommittee reports, let me defer the report for facilities and CPAC to Mike DeLobby, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And also Transpo, I guess, is coming up.
Yes. So facilities met on May 12th. And there was discussion in the group among a diversion report was provided, and they discussed that and felt that, as we discussed here, a rise in diversion in January was due to the flu and newly insured, and that they felt it was tapering off. There's also discussion on policy updates and effects on the facilities regarding any policy updates. CPAC met May 13th, and discussion at CPAC was policy updates as well, and also the Narcan administration by law enforcement. Transportation next scheduled meeting is July 22nd.
Great. Any questions on of those committees? And then education and training, Patrick, you want to as chair, you want to give that report?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Stratton. Education and training will be meeting again the first Wednesday of Thursday. At the last meeting, it was discussed and announced by the agency that the EMT accreditation curriculum revision had been released or would be released. I believe it was June 1st was the date. So we are attempting to train the system at the advanced and basic level, consistent with the new procedures Dr. Stratton has released, particularly the trauma triage as well as spinal motion restriction, and trying to focus on expanding. I believe we have an agenda item here of expanding the utilization of the Education and Training Subcommittee to be more inclusive of all the levels of practice participatory in the EMS system, not just the EMT and paramedic schools. So right now the subcommittee has done a little bit of work and released its work product, and I think we'll have further discussion today on the future direction of the subcommittee. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, and that completes the subcommittee reports and advisory committee reports.
Great. Our next item is unfinished business, and Dr. Stratton, you can.
I'll introduce this, and I think this is why many people are here today. So I'll keep my introduction brief. In the packet is the a description of our annual adjustment of the maximum ambulance rate for Orange County. The recommendation this year, and I should have memorized the number, but is for a let's see, 1.3%, if I'm reading the chart correctly.
2.4.
What is it?
It's
2.4% increase in the base rate for BLS ambulance services in Orange County. There's a chart in the in description of the process in your packet. The rate also is of interest to the Orange County Fire Authority, and there's information that will be presented by Mr. Wayne of the Fire Authority with regard to the ALS rate. And I understand, if you don't mind me taking the chair's prerogative here, that Mr. Weston of the Ambulance Association has a presentation regarding this. Bill, did you want to?
If you'd like, we can do it right now, Dr. Sherry.
Yeah, while you're coming up here, I was going to talk about the fact we don't have a quorum. And this is what we were discussing about in some of the delay in the meeting. We don't have a quorum, but if there's no opposition after discussion by the members that are present, the intent would be to move this on to the Board of Supervisors for their approval. They have to do final approval anyway. So what we will be listening for and have discussed and looked at the EMCC bylaws, we'll be listening to the presentation since everybody's here and this is a urgent matter for many, and then essentially reporting whether there's opposition or not as it gets moved up. So, Mr. Weston, if you will.
Oh, there's a gizmo. Perfect.
Sorry.
Good morning. For those that don't know me, my name is Bill Weston, and I am here to represent the Ambulance Association. Over the last 6 to 8 years, every time I've given this presentation, I was very fortunate to tell you that I missed the meeting every time they elected the president of the Ambulance Association. So this year I made sure I attended the meeting, and I was demoted to vice president, but I was still given the same task of making this presentation. So I guess it doesn't make any difference if I attend the meeting or not. As a reminder, members of the Ambulance Association include most of your major ambulance companies here in Orange County. There are 29 licensed ambulance companies in Orange County. Primarily, most of those maybe have one, two, or three ambulances, and they serve from outside the county. The members of the ambulance associations are your larger ambulance services, providing the bulk of ambulance services here in Orange County. Last time I gave this presentation, somebody got a little bit upset because I completely didn't disclose that in addition to having my Ambulance Association of Orange County hat, I'm also the Director of Operations at Care Ambulance. So I wanted to make sure that everybody understands that today I have two hats on, the Ambulance Association of Orange County, and that's the best thing I could do in the short time is make a a quick piece of tape to cover that. But remember, when you pull that tape back, I am also the director of operations at Care Ambulance, and that's really important. All right, today we're here to talk about the current board policy. The current board policy is one that's been revised just about every other year. It seems like every time we talk about it is we're revising it. But for the last couple of years, we've had the same current board policy. And that board policy is we take the all items CPI for our area from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and that's what we increase the basic life support and advanced life support rates. And I say all items because that's really important. Surrounding areas or surrounding agencies use different components of CPI. They primarily use the medical or the transportation CPI. We use the all items CPI. We do that for a reason. The all items includes about 19 different baskets. Two of those baskets would be transportation and medical. Transportation and medical are usually a little bit more volatile. You know, transportation is usually reflected in the price of fuel and oil. So those tend to spike really quickly, and they don't really represent the all area consumer price index. So that's why we use the all item. The rates are reviewed here at the Emergency Medical Care Committee and then forwarded to the Board of Supervisors for their ultimate approval. Some of the questions I've been asked is, on a regular basis, is who do these rates apply to? Who uses these rates when they send a bill to a patient or to an insurance company? On the private side, the non-fire side, they're used by the ambulance providers that are your primary 911 contractors. In this county, we have three primary contractors: Care Ambulance, Doctor's Ambulance, and Emergency Ambulance. They're also used by any of the other 26 providers who may provide 911 services in support of the three contracted providers or on their own. Maybe they came across an accident on the freeway where they activated 911 and they were used for transport. Maybe they were called to a skilled nursing facility and they evaluated the patient and it needed advanced life support services. So it really applies to all your ambulance companies in the county when they're providing 911 services. On the terms of the non-911, or what we call the IFT, it's not a requirement that they follow this, but most of the ambulance companies do index to these same rates. On the public side, we have a number of agencies that also provide transportation through a fire department delivery system, and those are Huntington Beach, La Habra, Newport Beach, Orange, San Clemente, and Westminster. So it's cuts across both public and private, the agencies that use these rates. This is something we've talked about over a number of years. We get a percentage increase, but what does that actually do in terms of versus a gross index or a gross increase versus a net increase? So I tried to take this year's 2.4% and actually put it into terms of actual dollars for you. So on the BLS side, staff is recommending a 2.4% increase. That's last year's CPI and this year's CPI. That, if we used it as a gross, meaning we just took 2.4 and added to the base rate, would equate to a $17.55 increase. That's great, but that's a gross. Net, what is actually going to be actual additional cash that is received by the organization based on collection rate? Remember, as we've talked about before, we're not going to get any additional from Medicare. We're not going to get any additional from Medi-Cal or any government-funded agency. The people that don't pay their bill continue will not to pay the bill. So really what we're looking at is increasing the rates for the private insurance carriers only. So the actual net, actual cash would be $3.16. On the ALS side, did the same math for you. We got a 2.4. Gross is $9.30. It delivers approximately $1.67 in actual cash. That's a challenge because the 2.4 is also charged to the basic life support providers that are contracted to the OCFA, and their rates actually go up $6.59. So we have this widening gap that we're going to talk about a little bit later. So I did my best to try and actually put it in actual dollars and cents for you, what it means. What's the Ambulance Association asking today? We're asking you to support the increases, but one of the questions people always ask, who pays that increase? Who actually has to pay an additional dollar or additional $3.17? It's the commercial insurance carriers. You know, it is just a fact that Medicare and Medi-Cal are not going to pay anymore. Nationwide ambulance expense is less than 1% of insurance company spending. So we're probably dust in their pockets. We are not really big numbers there. This cost shift is by federal design. This is intentional. This is cost shifting. Don't let anybody tell you anything different. And by not billing at the higher rates, you're forcing your ambulance companies and your fire departments to provide a subsidy to your insurance companies. All right. We talked about we wanted to support the increase, but most importantly, we also want to talk about a couple what we call oncoming trains. And these are things that we need to be on the lookout and on the high lookout this year. And here's a couple of those oncoming trains. This year, on January 1st, we're looking at a 22% increase in minimum wage. Minimum wage is set to go up on January 1st from $9 to $10, but there's a new Senate bill, SB 3, that has already passed the Senate along party lines to increase that to $11. So the recent increase that you've seen in Los Angeles County and Los Angeles City are going to be surpassed at a higher rate and a sooner to be implemented rate with new Senate Bill 3. So that's something giant for the industry. A 22% increase in wages is a significant number that we're going to have to address. We're going to have to address the decreasing number of patients with private insurance. We've taken people off the private insurance roll and shifted them to Medi-Cal or, in our county, Cal Optima. We're going to have to talk about the increases that have been moved to the 911 providers. We've had multi-million dollar increases in the new EOA contracts that need to be addressed. We need to talk about that gap between what we get and what we actually have to pay to the Orange County Fire Authority. And finally, we have to talk about funding for emergency ambulance transport of indigent patients consistent with the Lomita decision. So we have at least five trains coming down our track about to smack us head on. We need to talk about that. So in final, our recommendations from the Ambulance Association is we recommend, and we're asking for approval, 2.4%. We're asking that the board, yourself, recommend to staff and to the Board of Supervisors that the Ambulance Association and the Orange County Fire Authority meet with EMS agency staff and talk about those five bullet points and come up with a way to solve for those five bullet points. Talk about a way to solve for that 22% increase in minimum wage. Talk about our increase in Cal Optima Medi-Cal patients. The increase in the EOA contracts, the cost recovery methods and models used, and then the indigent transport. And we, you know, this is something that's really important. We got that 22% increase coming in January, and that's probably the biggest train on the biggest track heading right for us. And so we're looking for an ability to come back to your board with some recommendations in October of 2016. Oh, excuse me, I sent you the wrong one. October 2015, somebody transmitted you the wrong one. So that date was corrected, I apologize. Report back to the Board of Supervisors by October 2015, this year. Yeah, we can't wait a year and a half. Sorry for the typo correction. Maybe they'll fire me next year. And I'm here for any questions if you might have any.
Any board members have any questions? No?
I bet Jim's doesn't have any typos in his presentation at all.
Actually, Chairman Kanabe, if I may.
Oh.
Bill Weston, I'm sorry, if I may just address you real quickly. In general, I'm very familiar with the process of the ambulance rate increase and not horribly supportive of the model, and mostly because it's been put in place with the ambulance ordinance, which was established in 1985. This process is promulgated through Orange County EMS policy, which we all worked on together 6-7 years ago in order to formulate the formula of the increase. I guess my question to you, Bill, from either your perspective or the Ambulance Association, is when you address those issues that are coming down the tracks, is a structural problem that we're encountering due to the ordinance and due to the manner in which the ordinance requires us to operate as an EMS system from the 911 billing perspective? And do you see opportunity for us to make improvement for those five items in addressing the ordinance in the future?
I think I understand the question, so let me give you my best shot. I think there's always opportunity for improvement. I don't think we always need sweeping changes, but we need to fine-tune the tire every time we can. And I think that's what we need. The challenge is we're the only industry other than hospitals that really have this challenge. I can raise my rates $100, but if I only collect $3 by raising that, all I've done is increase my gross collections and increase my write-off. I'm also challenged is, and unlike hospitals, when I raise my rates or try to raise my rates, I have to come to a regulatory body to do that. So I'm kind of in that hospital sphere of influence, but I'm also in the sphere of influence of the Board of Supervisors, and then I also have influence by Medicare, Medi-Cal, and anybody else that wants to index their rates to those. So when you look at things like minimum wage is going to be impacted significantly. Burger King is going to be able to raise their price of a Whopper, or they're going to be able to shift some of their employees off the front line and into some kind of lesser role. They can change their hours of operations. They can have a four-hour shift. I can't have a four-hour shift. I can't close my restaurant off of peak times because people call 911 on non-peak times too. You know, if it would be really easy if people just called 911 between the hours of lunch and dinner, and then I could set the price based on their ability to pay. But we're delivering an essential public safety service, so I have to deliver that service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I need to be everywhere in this county 10 minutes or less. So that's the challenge we're facing. We can't really wholesale change the model because the model is influenced by many organizations outside of our control, outside the Board of Supervisors' control. So we're given rules that we have to operate in. And so the ordinance operates within those rules. So we're going to have to work within the ordinance and find ways to adjust it. The great news is of all the populated counties in the state of California, we enjoy the lowest ambulance rates. I'd like to say personally that we probably have the best service in the state of California for the lowest ambulance rates. So when we look at what other people are paying in adjacent counties, probably all we have to do is just come up to what they're paying in adjacent counties already, and we can solve our problems in the immediate future.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Bill, also with this rate increase, we're still in the county remain one of the lowest, correct?
Even if you indexed us to the adjacent county in Los Angeles, we would still be one of the lowest in the state of California. So we would be delivering the highest level of service with a front-loaded ALS delivery system, primarily in the county, with a support BLS transportation system, with phenomenal public-private partnerships that return money back to the county and return monies back to the cities, and we deliver exceptional service and at the best bang for the buck. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to have a presentation from OCFA. Jim Ruane.
Get a presentation. What you have in front of you is two documents. One is what I call the summary fact sheet. It's a quick and dirty, and then attached to that is supporting detail behind our rate request. As Bill stated, we basically are in a public-private partnership. We do believe it's probably one of the best in the states. It gives us the ability to keep our ALS resources free if it's a simple BLS transport, frees up our paramedics, gets them back in service. So what we do is we piggyback off the BLS rates. What we said is we're not going to ask for any more money than you're going to get as far as the BLS rate goes. So this year we're asking for a 2.4% increase. We've supported that with the surrounding county fee study. We also ask our external auditors to say that the fees cover the cost of service. And as your document proves, it doesn't. And touching on Bill talked about, everyone says we're getting that full ALS reimbursement on every call. The answer is no. On about 44% of our calls, we get that. Medicare, as Bill says, caps it. No matter what we do, they say we're only going to get $76 for that ALS call. When it comes to Medi-Cal, Bill has a great point. They don't get $125 for that call, so what OCFA has said, we are not going to charge you for it. So the system by design is inherently not funding these activities. So what we're trying to do is, and I agree with Bill, work out a relationship in the future that we can find maybe a better way to get the fees out of the payers without hurting our service delivery. So this is an annual increase we asked for. We're asking you to increase the maximum billing rate. I go back to my board to ask them to increase the maximum reimbursement rate. And I'm available for any questions.
Jim, the only question I had is that one of the slides that Bill had, it was his net increase was $1.65 or something like that, but he's going to end up paying $6.59 more to you. How does that work?
That was actually contractually set up 2004, 2009, 2015, and we're willing to go back and look at that. You know, I don't know where those numbers are coming from, but that's basically contractually what we agreed to. There's also a provision in the rates where right now the maximum billing rate will be right around $380. We're going to only ask for $280 of that. So there's some built-in administrative charge. Not a perfect solution, but it was one that we thought would be equitable at the time. Medi-Cal has changed. CalOptima has changed. Everyone is changing. So we're willing to relook at that.
Any questions from board members? No? Thank you. At this point, traditionally, we do public comment at public forum, but this is such an important item. Are there any comments, public, that like comment on this item specifically?
Yes. Robert Williams.
Robert Williams?
Stephen Wontrowski.
Stephen Wontrowski. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Stephen Wontrowski, Mission Viejo. I've been a long opponent of the AL. This is just with OCFA rebates going back on the ALS reimbursement. Long opposition on this, and I thought finally last when it came up with the Board of Supervisors last year, there was a good move within the Board of Supervisors to completely eliminate it. From what I understand, it was taken off as an agenda item by the by Bill Weston and his lobby group, requesting that the Board of Supervisors drop it so that it won't get rejected in its entirety. Not the increase, the entire thing going back to the ALS, back to the OCFA. Now, to me, as an OCFA served resident taxpayer, I'm hit with a double charge for ALS / EMS services. Once with the property tax allocation, going back to the OCFA to begin with, and then for the ALS reimbursement rate. So I'm referred in my area as this reimbursement as a kickback, all right? I call it a rebate. The OCFA has told me to say it's a service charge or something along those lines. Next thing is that if you have an OCFA ALS response, question, does the ALS reimbursement back to the OCFA include an amount for labor? If it does, they've already been paid for that, okay, by my property tax. Next item. If it includes labor, has an extra labor cost been incurred? Did they have somebody go on overtime because of this? Did they have to hire somebody else? Incremental cost for labor. Next item. If I have any unanswered questions on this, on ALS, can I direct my question to somebody on this committee? Because, you see, I've been reprimanded by concerned groups, or group, all right, about that I don't know what I'm talking about. And I try to be informed on everything I present to board of directors of the OCFA, to the board of supervisors, to city councils. And I'm planning to go out, again, to the board of supervisors and to various city councils and instruct them on what's going on with this ALS stuff. And where I've tried to get answers from the OCFA, they don't respond to my letters. They'll tell the board members that they are responding. So I said, you know what? Here's a test. I have 16 letters I just issued over the past year or so. Have the OCFA respond to you and say, which ones have been responded to? The answer to that was zero. So I can't get the information I need to inform the public on what's going on here. And I'd like to be able to direct questions, no longer to the OCFA on this issue, but to somebody, all right, on the EMCC, to somebody in healthcare agency. I need direction of where to send my questions so that I can no longer be called someone who's uninformed and who should get better educated on what they're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? Okay, at this point, do we would address?
It would just be, is there any opposition right. to moving it to the board?
Okay. At this point, is there any opposition from the committee members here in moving this to the Board of Supervisors for their approval and recommendation?
Yeah, I have a question. The report that Mr. Weston provided indicated the need to revisit this quickly because of the trains coming down the track. Does this recommendation going forward include that action take place?
To my knowledge.
Okay, so.
To my knowledge, no.
Okay,
I do not believe it does have an October 2015 re-evaluation written in it. The recommendation is for the increase based on the current Board of Supervisors formula.
And
that would be for a year.
And I understand that. However, I can identify with the train coming down the track. As a local elected, we get faced with stuff that hits us from out of the blue sometimes, particularly where there's no a mandated cost with no financial support in the process. And I think all of us in public service see that. If we move this as a recommended action, can we also include as part of that recommended action that they that EMCC, I believe, I'm not sure, Bill, who you're referring to, but I want to get that October date as part of this so that it doesn't fall off the track. Didn't mean the track, but I meant the focus.
No pun intended, right?
Yeah, no pun intended.
It would have to be
agendized.
I think we go ahead, and again, we're not recommending it. We're just, there's no opposition, so that the Board of Supervisors can deal with the ambulance rate increases. But as far as the five bullet items, I think it would be appropriate for us to agendize that for our next EMCC meeting, and then we can have some input, and then we can at that point hopefully have a quorum, and we can forward that on to the Board of Supervisors as a recommendation from this committee.
I'd support that idea.
Yeah, I'd also be supportive of that idea. I'm not supportive of going to my board office right now and saying I'm in 100% support of this proposal. However, I understand that this proposal brings some relief to our provider agencies immediately. What I am supportive of is to utilize the Transportation Advisory Subcommittee and to try to have those dialogues from the high level, because that's the most appropriate forum, I believe, for us to talk about these very important issues, since this is a transport provision, according to the payer. So I'd highly recommend that we make sure that we continue this dialogue before that October meeting, as Mr. Weston identified, so that we can start to find some solutions, because this is a problem that has gone on for years, even after Orange County EMS implemented a new policy to effect change to the rate setting procedure, as Mr. Weston pointed out, and as you've stated, Chairman, the salary increases that the state and bills are starting to bring to the fruition are not considered in those past policies. And while we may be able to bring temporary relief now by recommending moving forward on this item, we will continue to exacerbate the pain moving in the future if we don't fix the problem.
Point well taken, and maybe at this point we do the ambulance rate structure. We know that this is a temporary fix. We know that, but we need it at this time. With the comments that you made, and we will agendize it, bring it back here to the EMCC next time, and we can then provide some direction on, you know, committees, you know, who should be discussing it, things of that nature. Get some input from community members, and we'll take it from there at the next meeting. Okay, so basically we are forwarding it to the Board of Supervisors for their approval as far as the rate structure is concerned.
Recommended rate.
Increase. Recommended. Okay, that brings us to new business, and I'll let Dr. Stratton take that.
So under new business 7A and B, just a bit of information on this. The in the
beginnings when the EMS Act was passed in the early 1980s in California, and really even before that in the 1960s. The coordination of the EMS system was dependent on the local EMS agency knowing where, and at that time the focus was on ALS, resources were to allow for notification of the system and particularly coordinate with base hospitals and receiving hospitals and surrounding providers when there was a change in structure. So it's written into state statute in the EMS Act or Health and Safety Code that when a provider increases ALS resources, that it is reviewed by the local EMCC. So with that, this is not an action item, but to alert the system formally and have it into the minutes that the City of Orange has worked with OCEMS as well as their own internal city structure to develop a surge ambulance that will be staffed with two paramedics during the peak times of the daytime hours to augment their ALS services. In my letter, as well as Chief Dibbs's letter, is in your packet, and it describes in detail what will be done. Essentially, what they'll be doing, and this is all within policy and appropriate, is bringing up two PAU units, paramedic assessment units, during daytime to expand from BLS engines, for those of you that are familiar with deployment of resources, and then bringing in also a two-medic ambulance that's at their headquarters station to cover the City of Orange. The fire authority, and this is a bit more detailed, so I will refer you to the packets because there's also mapping. The fire authority, it's not a surge ambulance, but they're doing redeployment, increasing PAU resources, as well as paramedic assignments at stations deep in South County where we have quite a bit of residential development and population increase. And that is detailed in your packet along with the deployment maps if there are any questions. Both of these, because of the timing, have received approval from Orange County EMS, and we're bringing that to EMCC for just for review to make sure that it's in the minutes and to answer any questions that anyone may have.
I have a question in regards to, and it's probably ignorance on my part, the letter that was sent to you dated June 1st shows that the surge ambulance will go out of service each night at 1900 unless call volumes dictate otherwise. Am I to understand then that they're no longer providing transport since Orange provides their own transport? Does that mean they're going to rely on the other private ambulances to pick up that call volume?
This is just one ambulance, so they have all their other ambulances. This would be in addition to the current ambulances that they already have deployed 24/7. Okay, so what Orange is experiencing, and Newport has a similar, they're not using the exact same model, but during the summer months in Newport it's around the beach area, and all Orange it's around the circle. They're just large increases in calls there, so they're redeploying to cover a predictable increase in call volume. But it would not be a decrease in the number of ambulances they have in service prior to this going into effect.
Any other questions on these two informational items?
No. That brings us to two items that are actually action items. And Dr. Stratton, item I see there, are we going to continue that or both of these items?
Item C, I would like to, with agreement from the chair, handle that like we did the rates. It's really a recommendation to either accept revisions to these policies that have been out for 50-day public comment. Item D would require an action of the committee, so that I'd like to table, but I believe Mr. Williams had indicated he wanted to make a public comment to it, so maybe I could introduce that and he could make public comment that would go in the record that would allow us to proceed with it in subcommittee and then into the next EMCC meeting.
Okay.
So item C, I've asked Mike DeLobby to address this, I don't know if those are the public comments in our packets.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
So regarding public comments on item 7C, there were revisions to five of the trauma policies regarding criteria for designation, as well as some system trauma policies, and then a new trauma policy was created. These updates and revisions were based on current state regs and the American College of Surgeons Committee on Trauma 2014 Optimal Care of the Injured Patient criteria that is effective July 1st of this year. Those policy revisions are in the packet under Attachment 5, as well as a clean copy of the policy. The policies were placed for public comment from April 1st, 2015 to May 20th, 2015, and those comments as well as OCMS responses are included in the packet as well.
Great. Any questions on that presentation of the item? Dr. Stratton?
I do.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So this is, I may have missed it, but I think this is the first we've seen of it. So I don't feel comfortable recommending forwarding something that we haven't had a chance to review yet. So would it be a formality for now, and then it would come back to the committee next meeting? I mean, I know I'm termed out and I'm going to be out of here, but just as a matter of process.
It
wasn't provided in advance of the meeting with, mm-hmm. as it normally
yeah,
is. So,
yeah, considering that we don't have a quorum, if there's any concern at all, and already you've expressed it, then yeah, we would have to continue this item.
Uh-oh, you're going to kill me then.
No, no, and part of it's our, we need to make sure there's a quorum, yeah. OCEMS.
How many is a quorum, by the way?
We need one more.
Did you have a comment?
Yes, I would share Monica's concern in that, the attachments were not made available to the committee members prior to the meeting. So there is a certain level of discomfort to express approval of things for things that I've not had an opportunity to go through and read. Prior to the meeting.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's fortuitous that we don't have a quorum, because we can't approve something without a quorum, and we haven't received the information to approve it with. So what at this time is we'll go ahead and continue this item
to the next
EMCC meeting, and we'll be able to review that and hopefully at that time have a quorum. Does that work for everybody? Dr. Stratton, is there any problem with timing or anything?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, there is a problem with timing, but we need to do it correctly. The Orange Book, the national guidelines that we were coordinating these with, goes into effect July 1. But I think we've also, as you read the comments, realized that and Dr. Leck was here, that Trauma Ops feels this, that they didn't have time to review it completely. So I think our hands are tied. If there's any opposition, concern, and I understand intuitively what everyone's saying, we need to do it the right way.
Great.
Which would be to continue it.
Would it be, I don't know process here, but could we look at it in a special meeting before the next one? Would that be something? I might be even harder to get a quorum at that point.
I think because of the July 1st date, it'd probably be real hard to get a special meeting by then.
Oh, yeah.
So because we're already in the rears on this, probably the next meeting, we'll just take it up the next meeting and discuss it then.
Mm-hmm. So if would you just continue under normal operations without having made changes then? I mean,
correct.
There's something in place.
These would be, these would not go in effect until, we do it correctly. So the current policies would just continue until we're able
to
update
them. So
there's not
an absence, it's just a absence of the change that we'll be recommending for
correct.
A short period.
Okay. Correct. Okay. And then it's not a not a committee that reports to EMCC, but between now and our next meeting, the there's a trauma ops meeting, right, Mike?
Correct, yes.
So we can ask trauma ops to, and Dr. Lekwa, who's sitting here, is the chair of trauma ops, to make their recommendations in a formal letter to EMCC. So that even though they're not advisory, we can ask them to advise.
just for myself, I think that many of us would feel much more comfortable with that type of recommendation, knowing that they've vetted the recommended actions here.
Applied their expertise, sure.
And you know what might be good too is if the committee here was presented with the changes, so we knew it, you know, like a bullet item or just down and dirty, almost like Bill's not here, so I can't sing his accolades about making it so a fire chief can understand, but basically bring it back so a fire chief can understand.
Agreed.
Okay, so based upon not having a quorum, based upon the information that we've received, we are going to continue items C and D, Charlie and Delta, to our next EMCC meeting. Dr. Stratton, did you have anything to say about the Delta one?
Well, just to set it up for the next meeting, I've received a number of concerns about the Education and Training Committee. And my proposal, if we had a quorum, was to dissolve the current committee and recommend reorganizing the committee, starting with the bylaws. The complaints, I don't think it's worth reading those right now, are pretty specific, decisive, and particularly critical of Orange County's EMS management of that committee, as well as the fact that there seems to be a misunderstanding of what that committee's responsibility is. It's a committee that was organized in the 1980s when education was managed in local jurisdictions, and what's evolved is that national standards and guidelines promulgated by the Department of Transportation and the National Registry of EMTs and Paramedics are what the standard is. So this is probably the first of the subcommittees that needs to be looked at for reorganization. So realizing that we don't have a quorum, I don't think we can go to much further action, but Mr. Williams, who I think had asked to speak publicly on the issue, is here, and he's a committee member, so I don't know if you would want to go ahead and let him speak onto the record,
yes,
and if he still wants to.
Yeah, if we're gonna address it, I'd like to hear as much as we could, if you don't mind, Chief.
Great. So we'll do that. Anybody willing to wanting to comment on this item, come on up.
Good morning. Thank you very much. My name is Robert Williams. I am the owner of Training Educational Services Committee, SCE provider for the state of California for Orange County. My concern, and I did write a letter to Dr. Stratton, and it was not intended to be decisive. So if it was interpreted that way, my apologies, Dr. Stratton. My concern is that this committee that I've been on for a number of years, I feel that the training and the education of the medics and the EMTs in the county is imperative that it be done, but it be done in a way where the companies that hire, the companies that fire, make the recommendations and also guide and direct the agency, as the committee would come to you with a report,
the committee guides and directs the agency. The EMS agency has a great staff, don't get me wrong, and they're overworked, probably underpaid, and so they're doing a lot of the work of the committee. What the concern is then they come to the committee with the work they've done, and the committee's blindsided by it because, like, you don't have a quorum. It's been very hard-pressed for the committee to get a quorum. It's been very hard-pressed for the committee to get the providers in the county to participate in this committee. My concern is that with something so vital and so important, and education is paramount to me, that we have it and it's done appropriately and it's done correctly, because I'm getting older, I'm going to be using the system, I want to make sure that the people in the system are able to take care of me. So my concern isn't that an administrative body makes the rules for the training and the education, but people inside of the process are making the decisions. The committee doesn't need so much to be reorganized as we need to figure out a way to get participation. Again, I'm going to use you guys as an empirical example. This is a very important committee, but you don't have a quorum. We need to figure out how to make the participants in the system realize and understand the importance of the committee, participate in the committee, and do something where there is a tangible penalty or fine or fee or whatever for lack of participation. You guys are holding up very important business today because you don't have a quorum. And that was the justification of my email to Dr. Stratton saying, let's get the system involved. How do we get the system involved? Let's get your people out of the system. Let your people do what their job is instead of trying to do our job and their job. Because that's where the issue is. It wasn't meant to be decisive. It wasn't meant to be a negative. It's just saying we all have jobs to do. We all have our roles to do. And this committee isn't doing their role. And when you put in a regulatory agency in this committee environment, you've got a lot of people afraid to participate in the committee because they think if they say something out of place, they're going to be penalized and punished. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Hi, I'm Jim Karras. Thank you for, I didn't plan on speaking, but I just want to make a comment. I'm a former member of the Education and Training Committee and served on that committee in the late 80s, early 90s for many years. The committee has played a vital role in the education of EMTs for many years. It hosted a conference here in the county. It developed a EMT preceptor program that was used here in the county for many years. I believe that rather than disbanding the committee, because these are a group of volunteers, these are not paid members, they're volunteers that are interested constituents in the county that have an interest in providing their time and efforts to make a contribution. And so rather than disbanding the committee, what I think might be more productive would be for the EMCC and the chairman to take a look at the committee, perhaps make some changes to the bylaws, and use the existing members, if they're willing, to put some input on some changes. I think it can be done with the committee remaining in place rather than disbanding a committee that has served the county for many years. And I would hope that the EMCC committee would at least consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more would like to speak on this topic? Seeing none, any of the committee members want to comment? So what I'm hearing then is there for our next EMCC that we have three items that we're going to be dealing with that we'd like agendized. The first item obviously being that the presentation today about those five bulleted items that, for lack of a better term, the train that's coming, we're going to discuss that as one agenda item. The next agenda item we'll discuss would be item C today, and also item D, which we just had some comments on. So those three items we will have on the agenda for next time. Anything else, Dr. Stratton, that we should know? Or?
Yeah,
and, the minutes also we have to approve in the next next meeting.
And I'll speak with the chair if anything else comes up. I guess the next meeting is scheduled for August 28th, so the next decision you have to make is whether to have an August meeting or not. I think, yeah, August 28th.
Okay. Any other suggestions, comments? Maybe we address that now. It seems like we're going to need a meeting with these items. It seems like they're pretty extensive items. So I would recommend having a meeting unless we can't get a quorum. So maybe at this point, what we'll do is we could send out saying this is we need a quorum, and if everybody can commit to that meeting. If not, then we either have to cancel or move it to another time.
We have on July 21st, we're going to have an agenda item on the board agenda for six new members and one reappointment for members.
On the Board of Supervisors.
To the Board of Supervisors for EMCC specifically.
And what date's that?
On July 21st.
Okay, so we should.
So we should have a quorum.
We'll have more than a quorum.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and keep our August meeting. Yeah. Everybody's good with that?
Yeah. We actually have one new member that is coming on board, and that's Dr. Ritter.
Okay, great. At this time, are there any other members of the public that would like to speak on any of the items or any concerns, comments they'd like to bring in front of the board or the committee? I'm sorry. Yes. Come on up.
How are these action items that you guys are discussing in that table, how are they going to be brought up to speed on?
I didn't hear that, did you?
So the question was, so many EMCC members coming on board, how will they be brought up to speed with regard to the action items that are being carried over? And we basically will have to reintroduce the discussions on those items for those new board members.
Maybe if we can get the information here to the new board members, they can review it prior to the next meeting. And the purpose of the next meeting when we agendize these are to discuss the items. Hopefully there will be a presentation on the changes so that the person reviewing the stuff that they had prior and then the presentation at the EMCC meeting, they should be brought up. They should know what's going on, hopefully.
And review of the minutes, yeah.
In the review of the minutes. Thank you. Okay, at this point, seeing no other comments, any member final comments from the committee members?
I just want to thank the committee for allowing me to participate. It's been an honor and a privilege to do so, and it's my last meeting, so I want to thank you for that opportunity to represent Orange Coast DNA.
Thank you. Yes, this is my last meeting also on the committee, and just like to say that I'm closing in on about 40 years in healthcare in Orange County, and when I started in the late 70s, was right kind of going through the throes of when the trauma center system was being developed here in Orange County and established, and those were very exciting times. I was a junior executive at the Orange County Medical Association, and I knew nothing about EMS and EMCC and things. But I was given this assignment that you're going to work with EMS and EMCC. And you know, at that time, I was representing the physicians in Orange County. And from that time on, I've always enjoyed it. It's been one of the highlights in my career and things where I've been able to see just significant positive movements toward improvement level of care in Orange County. So starting out that way and then being actually able to serve as a member of this body, to be able to collaborate and work with fellow members of the committee, with the wonderful staff here at EMS, it's been an honor and privilege, and thank you very much.
I'll go next. I wasn't sure if you were going to bring up something substantive. I, too, am my last meeting as well, and I want to add to what Mr. Gilwee and Ms. Oyer were talking about. I've said it before that I am really proud to be part of the Orange County system. I think that we have something that the world looks to as a model. And we quibble over things, and we come in here and we discuss, but it's always for the betterment of our community and the service that we provide. And I've been proud to serve with that, and I would do it again in a moment. So thank you all for putting up with me and my steep learning curve over the last few years.
Thank you, Monica. I also would like to say my farewell to everyone and my thanks for this opportunity to represent the 2nd District for the last 3.5 years. I have a great passion for this industry, and I am one of the rare people who actually makes it to the EMCC and actually am practicing in the field at the same time. And I have my finger on the pulse of this industry, and I recognize that we're at a pivotal time, whether it be health information exchange and OC meds, rates for the provision of service, trauma center designations and pediatric trauma center designations now in Orange County. Our system is growing and changing, and Orange County EMS, which I've been proud to be part of, is always constantly on their toes trying to manage the changes that are coming. I, once again, am very, very privileged and very thankful for this opportunity to be part of the Emergency Medical Care Committee, and I can guarantee you that I will be an active participant in the EMS system moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thanks to all the outgoing members, great people, and it's what makes this place a good place to be. I'm going to do a little plug here now for my department, where if it was Rotary, I'd get fined, but Ronna Rossetti is a nurse from Hogue, and she's now going to be the new EMS manager for Fulton Brea Fire Departments, and a great person, so I'm glad to have her on board. So bad for Hogue, good for me. Anyway. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say on behalf of the public sincerely appreciates the effort of all the outgoing members, all right? And we sincerely appreciate it from everybody here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Dr. Stratton, anything?
I think that.
I think that's enough.
Great. So our next meeting then will be Friday, August 28th in this hearing room at 0900. Thank you very much for your attendance. Have a good day.
Good work.